Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is Dr. John Stamey welcoming you to ScaryCast. We have an incredible show tonight. And first of all, I want to introduce my co-hosts, the Queen of ScaryCast, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Excited for tonight's show.
Well, we are too. And Dr. Trey Dunaway, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast.
Happy to be here, John.
We are so glad you're here. And, of course, Kyler Smith from Houston, Texas. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
Yes, sir. I'm doing good. Thank you.
Well, that's great. We've got a wonderful guest. He is the author of The Meadow Project. His name is Trey Hudson. Trey, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm absolutely wonderful, guys. I'm glad everybody is bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this Monday evening.
Something like that. Well, we're so glad to have you here. All right, you're the author of this incredible book. So first of all, if you don't mind, tell us the short summary of the Meadow Project, because it's unbelievable what you have done down there.
Sure. What I'm going to do is I'm going to use my very best radio voice, and I'm going to read you the actual description that we have on the back of the book that gives a really, really good synopsis of what we're talking about. So if everybody's ready,
okay,
I'll jump right into it. There are several There are several epicenters of such strangeness that have been ingrained into our collective consciousness over the decades. The Hestaland Valley in Norway, the Hubakal Forest in Romania, Japan's Owagahara Forest, the Mesa Verde dwellings in Colorado, Stardust Ranch near Rainbow Valley, Arizona, and of course, the legendary Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, USA. We chronicle in the in-depth research of another such location located in America's Southland. This remote site, known among select researchers simply as The Meadow, is the location of many astounding events. Some have even compared this to the Skinwalker Ranch itself, with its own reports of UFOs, cryptid beasts, portals, missing time, crop circle-like formations, men, women in black, orbs, strange beams of light, mysterious beings, and many other oddities. The discovery of the Meadow was one of those often surreptitious happenings that one hears about from time to time. Its precise location has not been compromised and therefore has not been laid siege by curiosity seekers and other people looking for a quick thrill. In short, the site is pristine and inviolate. This makes it a unique and special among these types of places. Finally, after several years, all the research and field notes concerning the Meadow have been compiled into book form and are ready to be released to the public. The Meadow Project Exploration into the South Skinwalker Ranch will take you on an amazing journey from its discovery to its most recent investigation. You will get to meet the researchers and experience their excitement, apprehension, and sometimes personal loss. It is an amazing story that does not belong to any one person or group. It is rather the world's story and deserves to be told.
Wow. That is amazing. So, first of all, in your own words, tell us a little bit about the Meadow Project.
Yeah, what the Meadow Project is, kind of like in the little description I wrote for my publisher, It is a multi-year investigation and research project into an area located here in America's Southland that is very much akin to the Skinwalker Ranch of Utah fame. And a lot of people say, well, that's an awfully bold statement. That's a very, very gutsy claim to say that. But, like I just alluded to, we've had everything from UFOs, orbs, beams of light, cryptids, what we believe was a portal, and many, many other things. And our good friend and fellow researcher, who you're very familiar with, Matthew Delft, has actually been to the meadow many, many times and has experienced some of these things himself. So it's an ongoing investigatory process and project. And, we're just happy to be able to research this place for as long as we can.
Wow. That is incredible. What would you say would be one of the most interesting stories that you have had from the Meadow Project that you could share with us?
Sure. Probably the most interesting that happened, this has kind of been the apex of, myself delving into these kinds of things, happened in February of 2017. We had some really amazing events happen prior to that, earlier in the year and then the previous year. But this time, things really got ramped up. I'm going to paint a picture here since, we're in a, purely audio media here. And I want people to imagine a bucolic mountain meadow in the Appalachian Mountains, very, very pretty, with a beautiful, small river or a big creek running next to it, a ridge to the south, big open area, probably about 8 acres, forest on all the sides, just, it's somewhere that a person would go to find, some relief and inner peace, from the hustle and bustle of the modern world. So that's the kind of place we're talking about. So like I said, we've been researching this area for about a year, and our usual research protocol is we will take several teams and place them into the meadow with thermal FLIR devices and also night vision equipment, radios, things like that, and have them constantly scan their environment for anything out of the ordinary. And oftentimes we'll have a team that will run across the top of a ridge to the south to see if anything can be flushed down into this open area where the other teams can detect it with their thermal or night vision. So that's what we were doing that evening. We had four teams set up in the meadow. Each team consisted of between 2 to 4 people. I was on the ridge running team, myself, and three other gentlemen. And we were making our way across the top of the ridge and got to the extreme eastern end of the meadow, and we're going to drop down off of the ridge into the meadow. And on our thermals, we had been noticing quite a bit of wildlife down in the field, to be precise, deer. So we had seen several heat signatures of deer, and they were very obviously, quadrupeds. They were obviously deer, no mistake about that. So we knew what those looked like. And then much to our surprise, we saw a heat signature that was roughly man-sized. I'm not going to say man-shaped, but I'll say man-sized. Maybe 6 foot tall, 2 foot in width, about the size of a good-sized man. And so we're watching this through our thermals, and this heat signature shrinks down to maybe half of its size, half of its height. So now it's maybe 2 foot by 3 foot. Then it goes back up to 6 foot tall, back down to 3 foot, back up to 6 foot, and then splits into two separate entities, each of them being about 2 foot by 6 foot, and then disappears. So needless to say, that got our attention. We were really excited to capture this. So we dropped back down to the west end of the meadow, pretty excited about what we were saying. And something that's worth noting is every time we move, we're always radioing back to our net control and base station and also letting other teams know that we're moving. So we always know where everybody's located. We run this kind of like a law enforcement or military operation where, we're in constant radio communications with one another, et cetera, et cetera. So as we're moving down into the meadow and starting to move back to the east, we get a call from one of the teams that they are picking up an anomaly on their thermal. And specifically what they said is they had detected a heat signature that was box or cubed shape. And as I found out later, the box or cube shape is kind of important, you know, in other areas of high strangeness. And did I hear a question?
Now, Trey, I want to ask you something. What do you mean by high strangeness? Because that's a phrase that's in your book, and it's something that a number of people talk about, but we have never discussed on Scarycast.
Oh. Yeah, high strangeness is kind of all of the above and none of the above. What high strangeness is a series of events or a geographical location that distributes phenomena or displays phenomena that you can't really fit into any of the other categories. For example, you know, at the location that we researched, the Meadow, we've seen UFOs, UAPs. Okay, we've seen cryptids. We've seen orbs. We've seen signatures of beings. You know, like I just talked about. And all of this stuff together, you can't say, okay, this is a, you know, a cryptid hotspot, or this is a UAP hotspot. This is kind of all of that, and sometimes none of that. So the kind of the catch-all phrase is high strangeness. It's strange, but it's strangeness on steroids. And the term high strangeness, I believe, was coined by John Keel back in some of his earlier books in the 70s. And it's just a way of encompassing these areas that you just can't really pigeonhole. You know, you can't say it's a haunted location. You can't say it's a, you know, habitation area for cryptids. It's kind of all of that together.
Okay, well, that's really great. That's a great characterization of what you're talking about. Robin, have you experienced high strangeness?
Which day of the week?
Today. How about that?
Today? Let me see. What was weird about today? I'm trying to think. Okay, there's something. Trey, the reason why he's saying that is because at my house we get almost every cryptid you can think of, plus UFOs, mm-hmm. plus the ETs. Orbs plus portals that open up in the front yard. It's a freak zone. It really is. That's why Don brought that up. Yeah, today it hasn't been
because
they're doing some work next door. So anything that's been going on has been coming out of the front woods instead of the back woods. But there was a bunch, something was moving through the, I have a tree line on either side of my front yard because when I went out to take care of the feral cats, they were making the noises and the calls to me, and then you could hear them running through the bushes, and they were just too darn big to be a squirrel. And then I've noticed some orbs across the street tonight as I was sitting in the living room. So it's been kind of a quiet day over here today.
Oh yeah. So when I say high strangeness, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I live it. It's been like this since I was a little kid. Yeah.
Right,
in fact,
right.
I have. If you ever want them, I have some pictures I can show you. I have pictures of a UFO over my garage with an open portal underneath and a head sticking out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, it's normal, but it is very high strangeness, yes. Yeah, John got a first glimpse of it when he came over and stayed.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, It's actually pretty good. I mean, they're well behaved over here. I've gone out in areas where they're not so well behaved, and I've had to deal with some that aren't so well behaved. But everybody is pretty good here. I haven't had any issues. We've got like 3 or 4 clans of the foots that come in and dogmen. In fact, Pat got a really good picture of a dogman the other day out front. I think there's actually 2 of them over there. But yeah, it gets a little crazy. You know, it's like you'll see. You'll be sitting in the living room and you'll see one of them either look in the window or a body part go by the window. And then, like, when they cloak, they don't necessarily have to cloak their whole body. And so you'll look in the front yard and you'll see body parts moving across the yard. It doesn't matter if it's nighttime or daytime. But yeah, we've got some good UFO pictures from here, and I've got a few pictures of the ETs from here. It's crazy. It's the high strangeness. So I totally get what you're talking about. But where you find one, you find the others. They all tend to generate to the same spot. And I think that's where a lot of the high – yeah, they feed off each other's energy.
Absolutely.
That's certainly been my my experience, definitely.
Yeah, and so we're glad to hear a corroboration of both what you're doing, Trey Hudson, and what you're doing, Robin. I mean, a high corroboration of everything that's going on. And and please continue, Trey Hudson. I have to be careful because we have two Treys here.
Well, you know. It depends on whoever's the oldest. You can call Trey number one and the other one Trey number two. So, you know, I don't know who was born first.
I'm Trey with an A.
Oh, okay. I'm Trey with an E. So,
right.
Unfortunately, they sound alike, so that can get kind of confusing. But
yeah.
So
we'll just call everybody A and E.
There you go.
So, that'll work. Alpha and Echo. So I had one of my team members or the teams say, hey, we've got this box or this cube showing up on our thermal. You know, y'all need to come over here. So we're beating feet over to their area to try to get an idea of what they're talking about. And they said, oh, my goodness, it's moved. You know, it just moved from, you know, one place and moved to another. So, you know, we're really trying to pick up our pace to get over there to see exactly what's going on. And about the time we met up with that team, it had dissipated. You know, this cube-shaped thing had pretty much dissipated. They couldn't see anything with the naked eye. This was at night. They could only pick this thing up on FLIR. So what they said
by the way, Trey, when you're talking about FLIR, would you please explain that to everyone?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's FLIR is a brand name. Of a set of thermal sights or thermal scopes, and it's a device that takes heat and translates it into a visual representation. And folks have probably seen, you know, on police or military shows where they're tracking a person's heat signature, you know, in the woods or something. And that's FLIR or thermal technology.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, sure, absolutely. We decided what we were going to do is dispatch a team to where this thing was, where it had just been before it dissipated. And the idea was the team would go to this area and see if there was any kind of changes in the physical environment or, you know, any residual effect or anything like that. So we had a team consisting of several members, and they were vectored into this area where this thing was, you know. You know, move to your right, you know, 20 meters, move to your left, you know, go back, you know, 14, 15 meters. And they were slowly vectored into this area. And what was interesting is when they got to the area where this thing was, they completely disappeared off our thermals. We could not see them. And it was so stark that one of our team members said, did they just disappear? And later on, when they were being debriefed, they described it as thus. They said when they walked into this area where this cube or box was, it was really dark, you know, like almost like inside of a velvet sack, you know, that kind of black velvet enclosure, you know, blocking off all light, no stars, very still, very quiet. The temperature was a little bit lower, a little bit cooler inside of this thing, you know, where it was. And they walked in there, and they didn't have any encumbrances. There weren't any brambles or briars or branches or sticker bushes or anything like that. They just walked in unimpeded. They stayed in there for just a few moments, and then they backed out. And when they backed out, they started encountering brambles and bushes and stuff that weren't there when they walked in. And we have video of them walking into it, disappearing off of the FLIR, and then coming back out of it. And it was so strange that a few years later, we went back to the same location during the same time of year, except during the daylight, so we could see. Now, something that's interesting to note is during the daylight in February, the ambient air temperature is a little bit higher, so it's a little bit closer to your surface skin temperature. So there's not as much of a difference in the environmental temperature and the temperature of a person. So during the day, it should be a lot easier for somebody to disappear off of your FLIR than it is at night due to the similarities in heat. But we were not able to replicate them disappearing off of our thermals. So we had the team go behind some trees. And, of course, this is in February, so there's, you know, very little vegetation. You can actually see all the way up to the top of the ridge from the vantage point. And we have not been able to replicate this. So whatever it was that masked their heat signature also seemed to have changed the physical environment just a little bit. Like they were simultaneously existing in two locations. One location that was very dark and a little bit cooler and had no vegetation, and they were also existing in a reality that had the vegetation and the, you know, the brambles and all of that. So that was just one of the strange things that happened that night. And that one incident with the, and I'm just going to use the term portal. I'm just going to throw that out there because it's a label that fits, to be probably the strangest thing that we've encountered so far at the Meadow.
Wow, that's incredible. Dr. Trey Dunaway, I'm going to pick on you next. Do you have a question or a comment for Trey Hudson?
Well, I know you've detected this by thermal imaging. Have you actually seen visible evidence of abnormal sightings?
Yeah, I mean, we've had, like I said, we had that same evening, we had the figures, you know, on our thermals, the man-sized figures. What's interesting about that is that did not coincide with the known location of any of our team members. You know, we went on the radio, said, you know, is anybody down at the west end of the Meadow? And negative all the way around. So, you know, we've had that particular evening, we had a mysterious woman in black, you know, to coin the phrase men in black. But this is actually a female. You know, that was one of the things. We've had strange beams of light. We've had UAPs. So, you know, I mean, Dr. Dunaway, we pretty much had all of it at one time or another.
Wow. I tell you what, when you're talking about the women in black and that lady, do you mind sharing that story with us?
Oh, no. I mean, it is it's a integral part of the experience and a very critical piece of data, which becomes even stranger the more we find out about it. So we had this amazing experience with our team members appearing to disappear or drop out of existence for just a few moments and then come wink back into existence as they moved out of this box or this cube. And so we gathered together. Of course, everybody was very excited about this. You know, as far as we know, this is the first time this has been captured on video, with so many witnesses. And we were debating on whether or not we should, stay and continue to research. We still had those mysterious figures, you know, somewhere out there with us. Or should we go back to base camp, do a quick debrief and after-action review while it's still fresh on everybody's mind? So we were discussing that amongst ourselves, and you can imagine the discussion was quite lively at times. But, you know, as the team lead, I made the decision that, you know, we're going to go back to base camp and recount our experiences, you know, in as much as we can while it's still fresh. And my base camp operator, Glenn, comes on the radio and he says, "Hey, Trey, there's somebody here at camp that wants to talk to you." I said, "Glenn, I'll talk to you when I get back to camp. We're getting ready to pack up our equipment and come back." And he goes, "No, it's not me. It's somebody else." "Well, who is it?" And he goes, "Well, maybe you should see this for yourself." Okay, so obviously I'm curious and, you know, just a little, you know, flummoxed on, you know, what exactly was going on. So we pack up our gear. We hike the, you know, half mile or so back to base camp. And much to my amazement, waiting for me in base camp is a businesswoman. Now, imagine a remote base camp in the Appalachians. It's February. It's about 10:30 at night. So it's about 22:30 hours in the evening. It's cold. We're in an area that's so remote, you don't even have a cell signal. You know, so it's really in the middle of nowhere. And so I walk into camp, and there's a businesswoman waiting for me, wearing loafers, slacks, a blouse, and a blazer. Not who you would expect to find in the middle of the forest. So this businesswoman quickly makes a beeline to the person in charge, which in that time it was myself. And she starts talking very excitedly about us stopping what we were doing and following her down a deserted county road to a dwelling or a structure that supposedly existed at the end of this road to interact with what she called monkey bears. Now, I know what a gummy bear is, and I know what a grizzly bear is, but I don't have any idea what a monkey bear is. So, you know, I'll put it out to this panel. You know, if you had a strange businesswoman appear at your base camp, you know, just drive into your base camp out of nowhere and want you to follow her down a deserted county road in the middle of the night, would you go?
Never.
Immediate red
Probably
flag.
Not. Probably
and,
not.
Robin, this is a question for you. Would you go?
No. And that was all the stuff that goes on with the government? Absolutely not.
Well, I mean, you know, those government folks, you can't trust them, that's for sure.
Oh, no.
But obviously I said, you know, not no, but heck no. You know, we've got stuff to do, and I'm trying to be polite. You know, I don't want to be, you know, a butt, but it's like, you know, thank you, have a good evening, safe travels, sayonara, arrivederci, and all that good stuff. And this woman just would not pick up on the cueing. You know, she just was not understanding what we were trying to convey, that we had something we needed to do, and, you know, she needed to just go be herself somewhere else. And so she just was very insistent, just very, very insistent. And I know we've all run into people, you know, in our social interactions, you know, through our lives that just seem off. You know, you can't really put your finger on it. But you run into these people, and it's like, just something's wrong with that person. You know, it's almost the, you know, what the psychologists call the uncanny valley. They're just not quite right. And we've got a very, you know, primordial kind of revulsion at that. And so something about this woman was off, and none of us could really put our fingers on it. And so, you know, she's continuing to try to engage with us to get us to go down to this deserted road. And she's trying to engage with myself. And she says, oh, well, you know, what university did you go to? And I'm like, well, you know, attended the University of West Georgia. She goes, oh, I did too. I'm like, okay, that's odd. And she asked me what kind of degree did you end up with? I'm like, well, I've got a BA in psychology and a minor in anthropology. She goes, well, I've got a BA in psychology too. I'm like, okay, you know, this woman is obviously just parroting back to me what I say. You know, she's just telling mm-hmm. me what she thinks I want to hear. So I'm going to be really sneaky. I'm going to trick her up. I said, wow, so, you know, there in the psychology department at the University of West Georgia, I said, you know, that's a really well-known program. Who were some of your favorite professors there? And she started naming people that I knew personally. Okay, so what are the odds of you experiencing probably the strangest thing in, you know, your career of investigating high strangeness? You just experienced this. You come back to base camp, and there's a businesswoman there in February, dressed in business attire, in the middle of nowhere, that went to the same university you did, study the same program you do and knows the same people you do. So what are the odds of all of that?
Zero.
Even if she did know you, what in the world was she doing following you all the way out there?
Well, it gets even weirder. So there was something odd with this woman, something off about her. And so we're trying to, I don't mean to sound cruel, but trying to brush her off. Thank you, have a good evening, be safe, talk to you later, bye. And so while we're trying to dissuade her from, continuing, with her actions, she stops. She moves about 30 meters away from our little group there, still within the light of our lanterns and stuff, and she pulls down her pants and urinates in front of us.
Oh, my God.
Now, I don't know about where you all are from, but, in this particular part of the country, that's considered rather strange.
Bizarre.
When you got to go, you got to go.
But, or something,
I don't think that would cover that. That's pretty odd.
So she finally, got into her vehicle and left. And everybody was just really put off by this. I mean, it just left a very weird pall over the entire group. We were very weirded out by it. And so I got back home, after all of this, and I started doing some, trying to do some research. And there's a group of people that come into contact with individuals who have had incidences of high strangeness, and there are some distinctive attributes to these people. Oftentimes, they're not properly dressed, or they're dressed strangely. They want to dissuade the experiencers from either relating their experience or somehow dealing with their experience. They don't pick up on social cueing. They don't understand niceties, what is proper to do and what is, considered polite, in the particular setting and culture. And there's a term for these people, and they're called men in black or women in black. And, it's all through, not only UFO lore, but, accounts of people that have encountered high strangeness, of these mysterious people coming into their lives, acting as disruptors.
All right. Now, Trey, you have just introduced a very important concept. And Robin, I want to ask you to relay your story. And you know the story I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. First of all, I really sympathize with you. Been there, done that. I've been followed by helicopters. I've had my brake lines cut. I've had my bank accounts frozen. The thing that John is referring to happened not too awful long ago, and I was at home, and my daughter, who's an adult, but she was upstairs, and I have an awful lot of dogs, and they just went crazy, but they didn't act just irritated. They were, wanting to kill whatever was on the other side of the front door. And I walked outside, and there was this man standing there, very shocked. I don't know if he didn't think I was home and they were going to come in. We've often thought that we've had our house bugged before, so he could have been thinking something along that lines. I don't know. But he was walking up my steps, and I walked out on the porch, and I said, hello. And around my front door are glass panels. And so he saw the glass panels with all the dogs, and he said, that's a lot of dogs. And I read energy, and I instantly disliked this person. Didn't trust him, knew it was bad news. And I said, well, they don't like strangers. And he just kind of looked at me and stood back. He didn't come all the way up on the porch. And I said, can I help you with something? And he said, are you Robin McCray? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, well, I'm here. I have a message for you. And I said, what is the message? And it was never even a message. He just said, I'm here to help you make good choices. And I said, what good choices are you talking about? Are you selling life insurance? Are you trying to sell me something? He said, I'm not a salesman. I'm not selling anything. He said, we've been trying to reach you, and you're not responding. I said, how have you tried to contact me? He would never tell me. I said, what is it you wanted to tell me? well, we just want to be here for you to help you make good choices. And I said, and what am I doing that's not a good choice? Like, what kind of choices? And he would never give me what kind of choice. And we went round and round with this. And he finally, I said to him, I said, nobody's contacted me. You won't tell me how they've reached out to me. I asked him, did they text, email, call, mail, whatever. He would not tell me. He handed me a piece of paper with all my personal information on it. And on the top of it were three letters, which we did do a Google search on these three letters. And if you go far enough in the Google search, it comes back up CIA. And he said, I said, I noticed that you have all my information on here, but I don't see any of your information. The only place that you have for an address is a P.O. box, and the letters are not on it, or the numbers aren't on it. And I said, there's no phone number. I said, I'll tell you what. I said, why don't you give me your pen, and I'll write the phone number down on here so I have it. So if I need to make a better choice on something, I can give you a call. And he grabbed that paper for me so fast. He said, that's mine for notes. I said, you don't have any notes on there. There was nothing written on the back. What was on the front was typed. And it looked like a form that a five-year-old would get off the Internet. It was nothing that was professional at all. And he took it back. He says, that's mine. Those are for my notes. And I said, well, why don't you give me your business card? I don't have a business card. And when he pulled in, I want to point out, when he pulled in my driveway, he pulled in my driveway sideways and parked behind a tree so he couldn't be seen from the road. He was in a brand-new compact car with blacked-out windows. So we played this cat-and-mouse game for several minutes, almost, I want to say 20 minutes, maybe more. And I said to him, I said, if you just simply tell me what it is that you are selling, he said, I keep telling you I'm not selling anything. And I said, okay, that's good because I'm not buying anything. And he said, I'm just here because you're not responding to our messages, and I'm here to help you make better choices. When you don't respond to us, I come to you. And I said, well, you haven't told me what kind of choice you're even referring to. And he just told me that I knew what choice he was referring to. My daughter, meanwhile, heard the dogs going crazy, and she came downstairs. And upon seeing me out there by myself with this person, she walked out on the porch. He refused to make eye contact with her. Now, if you're selling something, if you're going door to door, I don't care if you're Hare Krishna, and you see someone else come into that space, you're going to say, hi, I'm such and such, and how are you today, something. He never even gave me his name. He gave me absolutely no information on himself whatsoever. And as soon as he realized my daughter was there, he couldn't get out of there fast enough. I told everybody here, this thing that came to my door was supposed to be a human. It did not look human. The skin texture was almost rubbery, and it was such, nobody has that clear of skin, nobody. The hair was too perfect. It was over like 100 degrees here, and he was wearing a long sleeve dress shirt, button down, and dress pants and loafers. And his fingers, to me, seemed extremely long. And he was very thin with long arms. So he goes, I turn around to go back in the house, and I don't know how he got from my porch to that car that fast because it was like 100 feet away. I wasn't even in the house. Five steps, I turned around, and I saw him shutting the door to his car. And he sat in the car a minute before he left. And when he left sideways across my driveway and went, so I couldn't get a license plate on it. And when my daughter came in, I said, that is the creepiest thing ever. And she said, Mom, what was that? And I said, I don't know. I said, it's supposed to be a human, but it sure didn't, it didn't have the energy of a human either. And I said, what businessman comes to the door, doesn't give you his name, doesn't say hi, doesn't explain himself, doesn't have a pen, doesn't have a card, won't give you his business phone number? And she said, well, didn't you see what he had? And I said, no, I didn't. I was looking directly at him, getting a read on him. And she said, he had a black backpack that he shoved up against the side of the porch. She said, there was no marks on it. She said, I looked. She said, there was no identifying marks. It was just plain black, and it was stuffed to the rim. With what? I have no idea. But he had nothing, never identified himself. It was really weird, and I've seen him now three times drive up and down this road, but he's never gone to my neighbors. I did check with my neighbors. They've never seen him, and I said to him, I said, are you going door to door talking to people? And he said, no, I came here specifically for you.
Hmm.
Well,
that's,
all I got to say is, Robin,
well, Trey,
I'll just say this real quickly. It's Dr. John. You called me immediately after that. And you told me this story. And I thought he was here selling insurance, but he wasn't. And it was just, it was an unbelievable story. Yes, Trey.
Yeah, it was, this is where our story gets a little divergent off of that, from what Robin's experience was, is this woman actually gave us her name. So part of my research is, I started in my daytime job, I've been trained on data mining and other stuff like that. And so I started using some of the data mining magic and pulling up information. And I found a person by this name that looked like the thing that came and visited us. So fast forward a couple of years, and I'm talking like maybe 2 years ago, is I get a direct message from a psychotherapist in Istanbul, Turkey. And he said, I heard you on a podcast, and I wanted to reach out to you. Now I'm thinking, okay, he's going to talk, ask a question about the meadow. And that's not what he was asking about at all. He says, hey, I also went to the University of West Georgia, and I have a degree in counseling there, and I'm a psychotherapist practicing here in Turkey. He said, I want to ask you about a place called the Carrollton Vortex, which Carrollton, Georgia is where the University of West Georgia is. And I said, well, I'm not familiar with it, but I'm willing to, listen. So anyway, we were chit-chatting back and forth, and he said, hey, that woman that came to your campsite that seemed so weird, would you mind giving me her name? And I said, no, her name was Jane Smith. And of course, that's not her real name. And he goes, wow. He goes, I think I might know her. So this appears to be a real person. He said, would you mind if I talk to her about this experience? Find out what was going on. And I said, not at all. I said, actually, I would love to talk to her. I said, I understand that she is in a profession that requires a state license, and I'm not interested in outing her or making her life difficult, but I really would like to interview her. So he talked to her, and she declined her interview with me, which is fine. And he asked her, he said, were you in the woods that night, with this group? And she goes, yes, I did approach them. And earlier in the day, I drove past their campsite. I was had a hard day at work, and I was driving around in the forest to decompress. And they had a sticker or something on the back of their vehicles or something that made me think that they were doing cryptid research, Bigfoot research. So I wanted to tell them about monkey bears. So she came back out there at 10:30 in the evening, and she said, they seem like they were being very evasive, and there was something else that they wanted to do, and they really didn't want to talk to me. So I just left. And the psychotherapist said, okay, do you remember anything else unusual about the evening? And she said, no, I got in my vehicle and left. So she didn't remember the urination or any of that. None of that registered with her. And so I was asking this gentleman, what was she like, at university? And he said that and University of West Georgia has a really well-known parapsychology department. That's where Dr. William Roll instructed. He was one of my professors. So they're into that kind of stuff. So he said, in one of Dr. Roll's courses, that she was the one that was always an intuitive. She was the one that always seemed to have her antenna opened up to multiple frequencies and would be very receptive to things. So he said, so if something was controlling somebody, she would be the type of person that an entity would control. So it's kind of taken this whole Men in Black thing and kind of turned it upside down. So, it has me wondering, are these actual real people? And I mean, Robin, it doesn't sound like your entity was a person, but in some of these other cases, were they perhaps real people that are under the influence of some, other force or some other entity or some other intelligence? So
it's possible. years ago, this was before I moved to South Carolina, I was living in Michigan at the time, and I had a gentleman. He actually made which really upset me. He made contact with my kids first and eventually made contact with me. And he said he had a bed and breakfast. And he had offered my kids jobs mowing lawns and stuff. And he said, oh, I need to talk to your mom to okay it first. And they kept hold of me. And I said, all right. So I went and I met him. And he said, well, I've also got this house right up conveniently. Right up the road from me. And he said, I'm going to turn that into a bed and breakfast too. Would you like to manage it? And I said, I've never managed a bed and breakfast before. I don't understand why you want me to. Oh, no, it's not that hard, but you live right there. You know, this is a good thing. So I said, okay. So we're working one day, and we're getting it ready to open. And out of the clear blue sky, I had not mentioned anything about the Bigfoots at all. Nothing about cryptids or ETs or anything. Clear blue sky. He says, so is that your buddy outside? I said, what are you talking about? He said, isn't that one Blackie? You know, that black Sasquatch that just ran by the window.
No way.
I swear to God. And I turned around and I looked at him and I said, why would you say that? He said, well, you see him. I know you do. And I said, I don't want to have this conversation with you. So he backed off. The following week, they needed TVs for all the rooms in this house. He says, I want you to go with me and help me pick out these TVs. And I said, why do you need me to pick out TVs? You're buying them. Get what you want and put in the bedrooms. He threw a fit. I had to go with him. So we go and we do this. And I do a lot of healing work on the Bigfoots. And one of them had gotten hold of me and needed help. So I was like, I went into the restroom because I can do it remotely and I'm doing my thing. And I come back out and we get in the car. And we're leaving. I haven't said a word. And he says, so, he said, have you seen any more of your friends? And I said, what friends? He says, you know, your big furry friends. And I looked at him and I said, why do you even know anything about them? Like, I don't want to have this conversation with you. And I said, I don't know you that well. I don't want to talk to you about this. And I said, as far as I know, you could be from the flipping government, and they're the last thing I'm going to talk to. And he looked at me, pulled off the side of the road, opened his wallet, and had a badge for the CIA.
Wow.
And he said, I retired out of there a year ago. And I said, well, for some reason, I don't think you're in retirement.
Well, and, yeah, you never know.
So they will put people in your lives. I've had entities take possession of people, even on a temporary basis, that will try to get to me. So I would caution you to be extremely careful, because what you've got going over there in the meadow is not just your standard Bigfoot researcher. It's phenomenal and
no.
It's fantastic and it's amazing, but be careful because they will come at you in ways you've never thought of.
And they being whom?
It's a form of the government. It's not a regular government like the presidency or the military or anything like that. This goes below the men in black. I've dealt with them before.
Right.
But this goes on a lower level than that, and the level that it comes from is a mixture of human and ETs. And they also can do a whole lot of things that they got from ET technology. So you just have to really be on your toes and be careful.
Yeah, I'm kind of familiar with that. I never did tell you what my day job was, did I, Robin?
No, what is it?
I'm a federal security specialist for the Department of Defense.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I kind of have one toe in that world. So, it is so weird. This place is so bizarre that it's constantly, like you said, it's constantly throwing curveballs at us. And I'm sure you've experienced hitchhikers, you know. The
mm-hmm.
phenomena is evolving. And I know you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
That you think you have one thing nailed down and then something else out of the blue happens.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, recently as October, I had a film crew, independent film crew, come down and spend some time with us. And one of the things that we experiment with is the ESPYS protocol, you know, which is, and I can go into that if anybody's interested, but we were, the director wanted to experience the ESPYS protocol, so we hooked him up, and his film crew said that they were seeing shadow figures materialize all around us while we were doing this session. And he sent me a message just last week saying that they are extremely unnerved by this. So the phenomena is continuously evolving in strange and, you know, and unexpected ways.
When you were talking about how something would be on that thermal and then all of a sudden it was like you couldn't pick it up anymore.
Right.
Okay. When I was in Michigan last year, I learned something that I should have already known. And if I would have thought about it, I probably would have known about it, but I didn't really. I don't use a lot of, I don't have a thermocam. I don't use them. I just have never really had the need to use them. And I had gone to Michigan to do some things. And while I was there, a friend of mine wanted me to go out in the woods. He's like, I just want to see how you do all this. I'm like, okay, you're going to be bored. I don't do anything. I show up. That's it. And so there was a group of us there, and the one woman had a thermocam. And, you know, any of your cryptids, you know, they're basically all high energy and high vibration. When they go and they do the cloaking and all that, it's all done by raising the vibration and the energy, and they're able to bend the light, and then they do it. They don't leave. They're just there. You just can't see them anymore. So I already knew about that. What I didn't know, because I don't use a thermal camera, is this part I did know, they do have what's called a shield, okay? If they are threatened in any way or whatever, they raise that energy. It's like an energy wall that they put around them. And what I didn't know was when they do a thermal camera, if that shield is up, you cannot pick them up. It's like you don't get anything off of them. It blocks it. And when we were out in the woods, the reason I found it out was because I was standing like 10 feet from one, and I could see it with my eyes. I could see it through the night vision goggles. I'm watching it blink, and I'm watching it breathe in and out, and everything is all, you know, sitting down on the ground. I don't think he anticipated us coming out in the woods when we did. And the gal that had the thermal, I'm like, I'm watching him right here. Come over here and put the thermal camera on it. So she did, and she's like, I'm not getting anything. I said, I'm literally 10 feet from him. I can see his whole entire body, his chest moving in and out as he breathes, his eyelashes blinking, all of it. What do you mean you can't pick it up on the thermal? She's like, no. So I had her look through my binoculars. She could see him too. She said, it's not showing. But yet when she turned around and went somewhere else where we heard movement, it picked it up right away. And then she tried it again on another one that was out there with us. And the same thing happened. So I just asked them. I mean, you know, they don't tell you everything, but you can ask them. Sometimes they'll give you an answer. And they said, well, we just put our shield up. They can't get through it. They can't see it. And I never really thought about it because I do healing work on them. And when that shield is up, I can still get to them to heal them, but it's much harder, much, much harder. And so sometimes they'll say, you know, guys, just drop it down so I can work on you, and they will. But if they get nervous, if they feel like they're being watched or whatever, they can put that shield up and you can't get through it with the thermal.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what happened to our team. Is it's almost as though they walked into a structure that was opaque, you know, as far as heat signature goes.
Yeah,
and we could no longer see it.
Yeah, that shield comes up and it blocks everything. Now, if you're looking at one in a physical form, like during the day, because we get a lot of daytime sightings, but and they're standing there and they put that shield up, you'll see them. It'll look kind of like it's a little bit distorted sometimes, but you can also see them. But if they seriously put that thing up, you can't get them on the thermal. You can't get them on anything.
Yeah, that's... Absolutely.
I don't know if that helps make sense to you for what had happened.
Oh, it does. I mean, you know, I've gone over Jan McAbee's testimony with her, what they call the predator thing that she saw when
that
she
was
fantastic. You know, and there's been some other people. I've seen other videos of you know, what looks to be a cryptid running through the forest and comes to a tree, you know, a vertical, you know, tree structure, and this is on thermal, and it runs behind the tree and it never comes out the other side.
Yeah.
You know, it's gone. So, oh, yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Wow, that's good. By the way, this is Dr. John, and I want to thank Transamerica for bringing this wonderful podcast to everybody. And we have another guest who has joined us, John LeMay, the incredible paranormal author. Hey, John LeMay, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm glad. I was dying to ask because I've always been interested in this idea of the wood spirit and knocking on wood to summon the wood spirit. And I wondered what Robin and Trey with an E, think about the thing about the entities like going behind the tree and disappearing, and if that would tie into the old lore of the wood spirit, if we have time.
Certainly.
Trey, do you want to go first?
I'll take that. That's a really, really neat way of looking at it, is people are starting to kind of go back and look at the folklore, you know, of our, you know, assembled cultures. You know, the First Nations and Native American people have a very, very rich folklore. My family's from Northern England and Scotland, so the Celtic people have a very rich folklore of the Wee people and the Fae. There's a fantastic book, if you haven't had a chance to read it, I strongly suggest you do. It's called Where the Footprints End by Joshua Chechen, where he talks about high strangeness in the Bigfoot phenomena. And he goes into the Fae and elementals and wood spirits and fairies and things like that, that these are folkloric descriptions of beings and entities that have been, you know, with us humans, and maybe even before then, they've been around forever. And, you know, as we moved into the Renaissance and the Industrial Revolution, we pushed all of those, you know, that history, that very rich tapestry of our nature to the side in our headlong rush to science. And now people are starting to kind of reconsider some of this stuff, especially in light of, you know, some of the UFO and UAP disclosures by Department of Defense, kind of like what Robin was saying, you know, a multidimensional nature of cryptids and other beings that are out there. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely worth investigating. And I think, you know, people that look at it from that particular optic are definitely onto something.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is when they're going behind these trees, there's a various number of things they do. Okay, we already know that they can raise the energy and vibration, cloak completely so you can't see them. I've watched them. I've had one stand like 10 feet from me and do it in broad daylight. So, I mean, I know it happens. I've seen it umpteen million times. But also they do the shimmer, and that's when you get that more of a predator gelled water effect. But anyway, they can do the complete cloaking. Another thing that they do, the hair follicles, okay? When you do genetic testing on hair from a Sasquatch, you have to have the roots because there's nothing in that hair to be able to test it. It's almost hollow, and so they do what's called a blending. They can go up to any object they want to and literally blend in with that coloration so that you can't even tell they're there. That's why you get a lot of people that say, you know, it went into this tree and it wasn't there anymore. It blends its body coloration to blend in with whatever background it wants, because that hair follicle is hollow. And you would be really surprised because the hair actually feels a little bit coarse. But when the inside of it, and the only reason I knew about having to have the roots to test it was because of the Ketchum study when I helped her with that. And so now you're looking at hair that's almost hollow, so it can go any color. The other option that they have, and I've witnessed this, they can open a portal anywhere they want. It literally, it's incredible. I mean, we had one cross in front of the road, and there was a rock wall on the other side, and it walked up to that rock wall. It opened up, it went in, and the rock wall closed. And I'm sitting there going, as many times as I've seen this, I feel like a crazy person each time. But so there are a lot of things. But as far as the fairies and the elementals and the dimensionals and the fae, they're all real. I mean, good Lord, go to Pennsylvania. You've got them coming out the yin-yang there. I mean, but we have them here. I work with a lot of people that, you know, will call me and they're like, I just saw this little thing run across. But, yeah, you know, the phase are neutral, so you got to kind of be careful because they can phase have more power than people will ever give them credit for. They can do a lot of serious damage should they choose to. I've only encountered Faye one time, and the ones I did, they were fine. I didn't have any issue with them. But they can also transform their shape into whatever they want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Robin, you talked about the Faye, and it just something just came to mind. Is I don't know if you know the cryptid researcher David Pardue in the Carolinas does a lot of work in New Orleans.
No, I don't.
He has a photograph that I've actually seen. It's a clear photograph of a troll hiding in a tree. You know, like I talk about a troll, like the little troll dolls. He actually has a photograph of one of those looking at him from a tree. So yeah, these folkloric entities.
Fantastic.
You know,
I have one that I took in the backyard that. At first, I thought it looked like a troll, but then I got looking at it, and it looked more, what are they called? Like a puckwudgie. But normally puckwudgies, while they're real, they usually stay in groups, and this one was isolated, and puckwudgies are extremely aggressive, and it never tried to hurt anybody. He was just hanging. I've got a perfect picture of him. And he was just hanging out, looking around the tree.
And,
so,
you talk... Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, and you go back to the Hopkinsville, Kentucky goblin case, you know, which is a very famous, UFO. That's what those are. You know, they're not aliens. They're something that's been here for, millennia.
Yep. Yeah, it's amazing. I tell everybody all the time, the world that we always thought was here never existed to begin with. Because 90% of these things have been here throughout time. They just all, stepped back and made sure nobody saw them. And now is the time that everything's coming out more out in the open. That's why the UFOs are more accessible. Now everybody's seen them all over the place. They've seen several in South Carolina over the last month. North Carolina has always been a big hot spot, and everything is coming forward. I think this is only the beginning. And that's not necessarily bad. That doesn't mean it's all
me. And I tell you what, this is Dr. John. I want to say, John LeMay, did that get your question answered, or did that bring about more questions for you?
Oh, we could talk all night, but we'll save it for another time.
Okay. All right. Well, I gotta say is thank you so much for Robin, what you had, and for Trey, what you had is just incredible. And in speaking of Trey, Dr. Trey Dunaway, do you have a question or a comment about all this incredible research that we've been talking about?
Did we lose him?
We may have. We may have
the fake folk got him.
Do what?
We were talking about the fake folk and they got him.
Mm-hmm.
They may have gotten him, but anyway, we might have. But anyway, it's been wonderful. This has been a great dialogue about, the cryptids that we are living with. And so, Robin, I want to thank you for this. And Trey Hudson, I want to thank you for all your insight. And would you please come back on here sooner than later to talk more about this?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
No, it's just been a lot of fun. And I know I'm weird, but this is fun. It's just been absolutely wonderful. And John LeMay, thanks for being here. And Kyler Smith, thank you for being here. Kyler, do you have a concluding question for everyone?
I don't think I have anything that would be a short answer. So I would say probably not. I would actually, Trey, if you're going to come back, I'd love to save it for next time so we can go really into depth.
Sure, okay. Absolutely. Happy to do it.
All right. Well, Trey, we want to ask you, would you come back in about 4 weeks and talk more about this stuff? And Robin, would you like to be here and talk about all this?
Sure.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks a lot. And just wanted to say I appreciate everyone being on here on ScaryCast, one of the most incredible shows that we have on the Internet, because nobody talks about this stuff. And so thank you so much. So, anyway, thanks a lot. And Robin, are you here?
Well, we hope
about her too. They're getting everybody.
That's all right. But anyway, John LeMay, Robin, Dr. Trey Dunaway, want to thank you so much for your input. And Trey Hudson, thank you so much for being here. And we'll have you here in about a month. And who knows what's going on with our connectivity. But anyway, thanks a lot. And we'll end.